And we're back. I'm Gervier Brahm, here with Shmakar Sandhu, and we are Screen Off Script. This week, we're getting into Zone of Interest and reflecting on all the major movie and TV news of the week.
Anniversary of the Oscars. Remember, there are no losers here tonight, but we're about to change all that. I should tell you that if you are a winner and your speech goes on too long, first you'll see flashing lights, and then the band will start to play, and then you'll feel something stick in your neck. And I would suggest that you walk toward the light.
In our first segment, we're going to be talking about all the news for this week. If you want to listen to our review of Zone of Interest, you can skip around timestamps in the description. First thing, obviously, we got to talk about this week. Oscar nominations are finally out.
Right.
I kind of want to go through it and just kind of talk about it along the way. So first thing, obviously, we're going to talk about Best Picture. We got American Fiction nominated, Anatomy of the Fall, Barbie, The Holdovers, Killers of the Flower Moon, Maestro, Oppenheimer, Past Lives, Poor Things, and The Zone of Interest, which we're talking about today. Before we get into like anything, any general thoughts on the Oscars or anything in terms of nominations?
I think before some of the other awards during award season, I thought it would be a little bit more competitive. But just kind of seeing who's picking up awards and who's winning, it now feels like there's a clear front runner in a lot of these categories.
Yeah, it feels like Oppenheimer is just about to like have a great year.
Yes.
It's interesting, too, because last year it was like, okay, cool, we have Barbie versus this Oppenheimer biopic movie. And it was almost like taken for granted because like the thing leading into that was basically this gigantic Barbie movie that was like at the end of the day, a massive gamble. Nobody knew it was going to be this successful.
Right.
Versus Oppenheimer, which was
the known commodity.
Yeah.
Nolan and, you know, Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Stacked cast.
But at the same time, like nobody really knew if that was going to be like this billion-dollar movie as well. Right.
Yeah.
Like at the end of the day, it's like a biopic. And you saw it as this fun marketing strategy that worked tremendously. It completely entered the zeitgeist and was like Barbenheimer, which just completely took over that season.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because then we went and we saw Barbie get this massive financial success. And it also as a pop culture moment, Barbie kind of took over. And to this day, it's still very impactful. We're seeing a lot of snub talk and all that kind of stuff that's really in that lane of like reflecting on how like Barbie didn't get nominated for this or that.
Right.
But at the same time, you're seeing Oppenheimer now in the season after like the money conversation's over. Now it's his critical conversation. And it's like we're seeing Oppenheimer become like the darling in that space as well.
Absolutely.
So regardless, this entire year has been like almost ran entirely by Barbenheimer.
Absolutely. And it's interesting and fun to discuss and debate who should get their flowers. But ultimately, both films have won in so many different ways.
Straight up.
And, you know, we've spoken about this a lot over the past year. Obviously, the marketing campaign was completely organic and it kind of took on a life of its own. But if other production houses and studios and movies can figure out a way to do what they did, you could see, you know, the long-term impact it can have both financially and critically.
I wonder if any of that is something you can shoot for as a studio.
Maybe not. Maybe it has to be completely organic. But we spoke about this.
Yeah. Even from like a marketing perspective, like just to make money.
Yeah.
That's a tough thing to do.
Yeah.
But to also have it be this perfect little concoction that's happened where it's also this massively critically successful film, for both of them.
Yeah.
It's pretty unprecedented. This is pretty 100%. Wild stuff. But
yeah.
So out of those, obviously, I imagine Oppenheimer is going to be the front runner for Best Picture.
I would imagine so. I haven't seen the odds yet, but I would imagine it's the front runner. I'm just honestly, just on a personal level, just glad that so many of my favorite films of the year are in the mix, including my number one film of the year, Past Lives. I don't think it's gonna, you know, win the award or anything, but the vast majority of the movies on that list of 10 made my top 10, so that's pretty cool to see.
I personally think Poor Things deserves that Best Picture Oscar, but
right.
Like I just, you know, you can see the writing on the wall.
Yeah.
I imagine it's going to be a night where Oppenheimer is going to win basically everything.
Yeah. But Emma Stone, I'm sure, will be a lock to win Best Actress.
That's what it feels like. It's funny, though, because that doesn't necessarily seem to be the conversation. There seems to be a lot of people that are kind of talking about Lily Gladstone. I just feel like the performance for Emma Stone is just so strong.
Yeah.
That in my head, it's like like I'm taking it for granted almost.
Right.
Like, does it feel like Lily Gladstone has what kind of odds are you giving for each of them?
Like, the thing about Lily Gladstone's performance is it is also very incredible. It's a great film, Killers of the Flower Moon. She does an incredible job. But Emma Stone just turned in one of the best performances of all time.
Yeah, straight up.
Male, like, or female. What are we even talking about?
You know what I mean? Like, I hate this, like, conversation because it's like, this is the kind of movie that should be like massively recognized, in my opinion, like just because of what an achievement it is. It's funny because I actually was thinking about like, how do the Oscars even determine this stuff? And I tried to Google like, okay, cool, like what's the criteria? What does it mean to win an Oscar? Like, what kind of merit are we looking for? It's really difficult. So I turned to my friend, ChatGPT.
Yes.
So it actually was great. I said, what criteria is required to win an Oscar? What merits exactly? And it came down to a few categories. Quality of work, originality and creativity, critical acclaim, cultural and social impact, craftsmanship, and campaigning. I feel like that's a pretty good way to look at it.
Yeah.
When I think of a movie like Oppenheimer, quality of work, tremendously high. Originality and creativity, pretty solid. Obviously, it's a biopic, so it's in that space. Critical acclaim, obviously, across the board. That's what's kind of being proven now, that it's already receiving that tremendously. Cultural and social impact, like we just mentioned, Barbenheimer, one of the biggest campaigns of the year.
Yep.
I think that is where Poor Things kind of lacks, because it hasn't so far that social impact in the same way that those other movies have.
It's also such a out there kind of movie in terms of imagine trying to market the movie and, and promote it.
But that's where I give it extra points for originality and creativity.
Oh, for sure.
And then on the other side, craftsmanship, I just feel like for both of them, they're tremendously strong in completely different ways. And last, obviously, campaigning. That is another thing that Oppenheimer seems to be doing really, really well.
Yeah. Like,
people are talking about that movie all the time.
And it's also, at the end of the day, all of these award shows, they're so political as well.
Other categories that I want to talk about, actor in a leading role, we got Bradley Cooper for Maestro, Colman Domingo for Rustin, Paul Giamatti for The Holdovers, Cillian Murphy for Oppenheimer, Jeffrey Wright for American Fiction. I imagine everyone is assuming Cillian Murphy is going to win that one, but anybody else that stands out to you that should be in that conversation?
I'm rooting for Paul Giamatti, I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I really, really loved his performance in The Holdovers, and he has won the Golden Globe in the, I guess, the comedic
I think it was comedy, musical and drama.
Musical and drama.
Or musical and comedy.
Musical sorry. Comedy category. So that's kind of nice to see him actually get some flowers just kind of leading into award season. But yeah, it does kind of feel like it's going to be Cillian's year.
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah.
As far as actress in a leading role, I asked you, but what kind of odds are you giving Emma Stone, Lily Gladstone?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like a one-horse race that I think it's a shoe-in that Emma Stone's going to win. But I feel like Lily Gladstone could be the dark horse. I don't want to say it's a two-horse race because I just said it was a one-horse race. But I just can't fathom a situation where Emma doesn't win.
Yeah.
It would be, honestly, I'd be shocked if Emma doesn't win the award.
Yeah, yeah. It feels like a really missed opportunity to like recognize somebody for greatness.
At the end of the day, I don't care what happens. The best have to win the awards. You know?
It's tough though, because like obviously that can mean so much, but it just, for me, it's rare that something feels this specifically clear to me of who is the best. And I think, as far as the actor conversation goes, I feel like that's pretty split.
Yeah.
I feel like there is an argument in a couple different ways.
Right.
This one doesn't feel that way to me.
Yeah.
It feels very clear cut.
Also in Poor Things, Emma Stone is the actual full on lead, whereas Killers of the Flower Moon is more of an ensemble. Yeah. And I'm not trying to diminish Lily Gladstone's performance in the movie or her character, but Poor Things literally is about Bella Baxter.
Yeah. And I actually think
it's driven by her performance.
Listen, realistically, in like 10 years, if we're looking back at these performances, I will not be considering the Lily Gladstone performance as one of the best performances I've seen during that span, or like in the last 10 years, even including that. I don't see that happening.
Right.
But I absolutely believe I've seen one of the best characters I've seen in film in Poor Things with Emma Stone as Bella Baxter. As far as directing goes, we got Anatomy of the Fall, Justin Triet, Killers of the Flower Moon, Martin Scorsese, Oppenheimer, Christopher Nolan, Poor Things, Yorgos Lanthimos, Zone of Interest, Jonathan Glazer.
Yeah, I feel like this is Nolan's year, man. He hasn't won an Oscar yet, and you would expect a filmmaker of his caliber to win the Best Director Oscar. Now, the question is could this almost be an opportunity for the Academy and the voting members to be like, oh, this is his year? Even though perhaps you could argue that he's made better films in previous years that maybe he should have got the Oscar for, sometimes it kind of works in a roundabout way, maybe that let's just give it to him because this is our opportunity to give him his ultimate flowers and win the Oscar.
Certainly, yeah. This definitely feels like that kind of year where, regardless, I feel like it's Oppenheimer's year. I'm so accepting of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, to the point where if there are some shocks and Oppenheimer doesn't win some categories and some awards, that will be the big news story coming out of
it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So speaking of snubs, we talked about Barbie not really getting the recognition some people are feeling like it should have gotten. One big snub obviously being Greta Gerwig for Best Director, and the other being Margot Robbie for Best Actress.
Right.
Hearing all of the nominations, do you feel like those are accurate, or do you feel like what do you feel about that as a snub?
I think they should have both got a nomination.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think...
I agree.
Anyone actually feeling any type of way about them being snubbed is right to feel the way they feel. Yeah. Especially because I know we haven't obviously reviewed Zone of Interest yet, but we're about to.
Yeah.
But just from a personal opinion perspective, Greta Gerwig should be... Yeah, exactly.
I think like a big part of that is what we were just talking about before in terms of criteria. Cultural and social impact. Mm. Not to say like, let's say The Avengers is like the biggest movie of the year.
Right.
It's a very different conversation because it would be like comparing quality and all that kind of stuff that I think Barbie still delivers on top of being massively successful.
Yeah.
Whereas a movie that's just big doesn't necessarily, there almost has to be like a baseline of quality that's like tremendously high.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as cultural and social impact, I feel like Barbie was just like massive. Mm-hmm. It almost feels kind of like a bad move on the Oscars part, but it is what it is, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Leo not getting a nomination for Best Actor. Do you feel any kind of way about that?
Yeah, I do. Just from the top of my head, remembering the list of people that were up for the award, I would swap him for like a Bradley Cooper, if I'm being honest with you. I thought his performance in Killers of the Flower Moon was more compelling and more impactful to me as a viewer than I thought of Bradley Cooper's in Maestro personally.
Yeah, what about Zac Efron in Iron Claw? Did you feel like he merits any kind of consideration in that kind of way?
When it's a list of five, no. If we're talking about a list of 10, yes, in my opinion.
No, I feel you.
Yeah.
It's interesting, right? Because at the end of the day, I have two thoughts, right? Like one is there are a lot of great, enduring, culturally significant movies that never got nominated for Oscars.
Right.
So like at the end of the day, on one side, what does this even mean?
Yeah.
But I saw this quote from Christopher Nolan where he was saying that if he did win Best Director at the Oscars, it would mean the world to him. He says, I grew up loving Hollywood movies and watching the Academy Awards as a kid. It always stood in my mind for the highest form of recognition in a field that I love. I can understand both of those thoughts. Mm. Like on one side, there's so many movies that just never got recognized. On the other side, obviously the Oscars mean a lot to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I think both of those are very valid.
Yeah.
You know,
it's funny. James Cameron, one of my favorite filmmakers of all time. Titanic isn't my favorite movie.
Yeah.
You know,
it's like,
that's the movie.
Like my least favorite James Cameron movie.
And it's not a movie that, I go to as a rewatch, you know, ever.
Yeah.
But it's the movie that swept the Oscars that year. It's the movie that he won the Oscar for.
Yeah.
It wasn't Terminator or Terminator 2 or Aliens or Avatar or anything like that. It was Titanic.
A period
movie.
Yeah.
Right.
That's what I kind of feel like as far as Christopher Nolan kind of winning in this moment. Yes, it feels good in the moment and it's fine in the moment. Like I don't feel like anybody's getting robbed or something like that. Oppenheimer is having a big significant moment right now.
Yeah.
But I just feel like in 10 years, I'm not going to look back at Oppenheimer in that same way. It doesn't feel that same way to me.
Mm.
It almost feels like when we look back at that list, a lot of other movies, I'm going to look back at very fondly.
Yeah.
Right? Like, I'm genuinely going to, like, look at Poor Things as an all-timer of a film.
Yeah.
And, again, everybody can have a different opinion. And, obviously, if you don't agree with that, you're going to be like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
But for me, personally, like, Oppenheimer is that, what you just mentioned. Like, it's in how interesting his catalog is. That's the one that wins. That's
right.
The only thing that kind of messes with me.
Yeah. The one thing I will say, though, and we've spoken about this over the last couple of months, is it's overall been a much stronger year than the previous 12 months. And we were already gushing over how amazing 2022 was.
Yeah.
2023 as a whole, as a collective, I just felt like we had more higher quality films across the board. And that is reflective of most of the nominations that I do agree with.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because then we're going into 2024. This past weekend, Mean Girls was the number one movie at the box office.
Yeah.
But one caveat in the Variety article that I was reading, this is a particularly like sleepy box office weekend. And they mentioned that this was going to be as a result of the pandemic, number one, and number two, the strikes. And I think that doesn't necessarily blame them in a kind of way, but it also is just like a reason. You know, 2024 is going to have some holes, specifically because of those reasons, because they didn't get to make as many movies possibly or
finish movies, or promote movies,
whatever it ends up being.
Yeah, yeah.
There is going to be something in 2024. There had to be a year that had to like kind of sacrifice,
right?
Or like be the result of that sacrifice.
Yeah, maybe H1 is a little on the weaker side, but we have a strong second half of 2024.
Yeah. You know? That's what happened last year too. Yeah, you never know. It just is going to be interesting to see kind of how this year kind of shakes out.
Yeah.
What's going to be like the schedule. Cause like it feels like a lot of stuff. It just doesn't feel like there's a lot of major releases happening this year.
Yeah. And the funny thing is we always end the year having this conversation about all these incredible films that we saw, but they are not on our radar at the beginning of the year.
For sure.
Because they come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They come out of these film festivals. They come out of these, you know, countries that have just produced something that's kind of like cut through the ether and has kind of made its way to us here in North America.
There's always something. The cream always rises to the top.
Yeah.
So it's going to be interesting to see what does this year.
Yeah.
But as far as other news goes, I have three more news stories I want to finish off with. The first one being Gabriel LaBelle. He's been cast as Lorne Michaels. You might remember him. He was young Steven Spielberg in The Fablemans.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
All right. And he's going to be Lorne Michaels in SNL 1975 with Cooper Hoffman and Rachel Senna. So all three, I think that's a really strong little cast right there. The film follows the real life behind the scenes accounts of opening night at Saturday Night Live. That's so up my alley, it's ridiculous.
This is definitely one of your major stories of the week, isn't it?
100%. Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. This is ridiculous. Like, this feels like a Taylor. I love SNL.
Right.
I love the history of SNL.
Right.
And Rachel Senna is just really crushing it right now. And I'm excited to see kind of what happens with all of that.
Love the cast. I really, really do love the concept and the idea of the movie. Growing up in the UK, we weren't exposed to SNL, you know, and I only moved to Canada, 5 years ago, and I've seen, you know, a couple of the big ones, like, oh, Eddie Murphy's making a comeback, got to watch this one, or Dave Chappelle's hosting, got to watch that one. So there's a couple that I always kind of make sure I kind of go out of my way to watch. But in terms of just kind of growing up with that culture and having that to look forward to every Saturday night, that was my experience growing up. So I would imagine for people in the US and Canada, this might be a pretty cool movie to watch.
Yeah, I don't even know if it's that. I think it's like a specific group of like comedy nerds
sure.
who like love, because SNL has like its own little cult following.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, there's people who are really into SNL,
and the fact that it's been a mainstay in especially the US in terms of just like a Saturday night fixture for 30, 40, 50 years.
1975,
incredible, man.
Yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah,
like the run of SNL is pretty ridiculous too, and it's interesting timing too, because we're getting this Lorne Michaels depiction in film, and this is all coming around the talks of right now. I've been hearing a lot of rumors of, well, who's going to replace Lorne Michaels as the showrunner for Saturday Night Live?
Right.
Because it's like the same thing as like replacing Vince, right? Like, who is going to be the next person? That's one of the biggest things about SNL, is because it's not just a show that's on every single Saturday night. It's a cast that gets created that ends up somehow being some of the most prominent comedians of that generation.
Right.
Right. Like a Bill Hader running it in film right now, killing it in Barry. That's where he got his real start, right? You see like so many other people that just kind of came through that, whether it be Andy Samberg, whether it be like even like a Tina Fey, right? Like she is actually the one that has been rumored as one of the strong front runners as somebody to take over for SNL. So it's going to be interesting to see kind of the direction of that as well. Next one I got might be a little bit more up your alley. A new Jurassic World movie's in the works. Jurassic Park screenwriter David Kopp will write the script to introduce a new Jurassic era.
This is what you thought would be up my alley.
It's more up your alley than SNL, all right?
Fair.
But it's the original writer, though. How do you feel about that?
It doesn't matter to me.
No?
Yeah, it doesn't matter to me. I think
there's a space for dinosaur movies.
Sure, but like when Jurassic World dropped, I was like, oh, cool. It's like they've actually done a good job of almost like hitting the reset button. They've refreshed it. I thought it was pretty cool. The original will still always be the GOAT, and it will still have a special place, you know, for me kind of growing up with that Spielberg, you know, original movie. But some of these recent sequels have just it's like the last one, Dominion, I couldn't care less. It was so bad. But sure, in terms of a spectacle summer blockbuster dinosaur movie, sure, why not?
You know what, Godzilla Minus One tells me that there is a space for these big monster movies that is just not examined in interesting ways. Like a Jurassic World where, I don't know, there was some sort of care taken with the story and the development of the characters beyond just dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And beyond just, oh man, they escaped. If there was something more than that, I'm sure there's like a lot. I think that's what these studios are probably recognizing right now, is like, we have these properties. We've been kind of just churning out whatever.
Yeah.
Let's see if we can make something better. Like, there's always like a life cycle of these things. And maybe this is the life cycle point where Jurassic Park is like, let's just try to make something good.
I can't give Hollywood Studios that much credit for big IP.
I feel you.
You see a low-budget Godzilla movie coming out of Japan that does what it did because they had to put so much care in character development and storytelling because they had a very low budget versus let's make a $200 million Jurassic Park or Jurassic World 7 in the series.
Hey, listen,
it is what it is.
I feel you, but like they steal so many things from Japan anyways, you might as well steal good ideas. You know what I mean?
God bless them.
Last story I got is Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler are working on a new movie, so that pairing is finally back together.
Nice.
After we got Black Panther, after we got Fruitvale Station and Creed, and now they will be focusing on a movie about vampires.
Yeah, man.
So, I'm sure you've heard about this. What were your thoughts on it?
I'm hype. Just the two of them coming back and also working on a project that is so far left of what they've done before.
Yeah.
It's like a new genre, vampires. So is it hard horror? Is it going to be diving deep into vampire lore? What does it look like?
And also, action?
Is it action?
Yeah, exactly.
What is this? What does this look
like?
In
my head, it's like, we know Blade's coming out.
Right.
Is this a Blade-ish?
Yeah.
Movie? Like, what are we making right now?
Or are we doing more Interview with the Vampire style? I also saw, man, there's a bidding war.
Yeah.
Out there. All these studios are trying to make sure that they can get the rights to distribute this film. Yeah, so
this pairing is proven money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's for sure going to work.
And also, I know we've spoken about this before, using the Scorsese-DiCaprio kind of relationship.
Pairings,
right? This is another one that's really tremendous, and
it's been proven to be really, really great.
Yes.
And I love it. At the end of the day, we talk about, you know, Daniel Kaluuya and Jordan Peele. We talk about now Yorgos and Emma Stone. Like, these are money pairings.
Ani and Cameron for years. Yeah,
for years and years. And I'm like, you get to see them kind of grow in terms of chemistry and the different kinds of things that they can explore.
Yeah.
And it's going to be really cool to see what Michael B. Jordan and Ryan Coogler come up with.
Yeah, yeah.
Because no matter what, I'm sure it's going to subvert whatever expectation we have.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I really have no idea what this movie is going to be about.
Great.
You know what I mean?
I don't want to know anything.
But the fact that it's vampires, like that alone is enough for me to be like, all right, cool, let's see what this is. But that's everything as far as news goes this week. Let's get into the movie we're talking about, the now Oscar nominated The Zone of Interest. All right, gentlemen, so we're talking Zone of Interest. We just watched this last week, and it's definitely gonna be an interesting movie to talk about,
right?
Because it's not a conventional movie in any sense of the word.
Yeah.
Okay, so first off, this is how I would describe this movie.
Sure.
You tell me if this is accurate.
Okay,
so it's about a family that's living by a concentration camp, and the husband works at that concentration camp and helps with things that on like a service level,
yep,
seem like he's helping with productivity and development of new torture or genocide devices to help in the efforts of the Holocaust. Yeah, but the movie is not technically about that. It's more about this family that's just trying to live like this normal life under these weird circumstances. Yeah, that's what I capture.
Yeah, that's pretty bang on the money. It's almost like showcasing a German Nazi family just going about their business. This is normal to them. Oh, we're going to kill all these people. This mass genocide happening just mere meters away over this wall while we're figuring out what we're going to do for dinner, what we're going to wear. And it's just kind of like that side story is what makes this movie different.
Yeah.
That hasn't been explored in any way, shape, or form in any previous movie. There's always been about the Holocaust and what goes on and, you know, the tragedy that happened, the genocide that happened. And so I thought it was a very interesting move to write and develop this script and make this movie about the German Nazi side of things and
humanistic side of that.
Yeah. And how, you know, this lead character, you know, Rudolph is just, you know, really worried about his position and promotion in the Nazi army and all this kind of stuff and what that's going to mean for the family. We have to move here, we have to move there, and kids just playing around.
Yeah, it's definitely like a art house kind of movie.
Yeah.
It definitely uses like a weird, or not weird, but it uses like a very different structure for its storytelling.
Yeah.
Right? It's very different in terms of random soundtracks, random noises you hear, random cutaways,
visuals.
Obviously, none of this is actually random. Like, it's very purposeful.
Mm.
But even when, like, there's like a random cut, or not random again, a different kind of cutaway to a completely different era of time, and then they cut back to the movie.
Yeah.
And like, there's just interesting choices that they kind of make in terms of like editing. It's definitely strong social commentary.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, like, I was curious though, like, when you walk away from this movie, now we know this is an Oscar nominated movie, nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, a lot of major awards.
Yeah.
How do you feel about this movie?
You know, I think it was like well made technically, and I thought there were some strong performances, and I think there were some strong decisions, even just like how I was talking about, they are living right next to this concentration camp, but we don't really see any of that happen. We just see smoke in the air to signify that all this killing is genocide is happening.
Or noise.
Or noises, right?
The torturous noise in the background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really impressed by Sandra Hüller, who, again, what an incredible breakthrough year for this German actress in both Anatomy of a Fall and now The Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
You know, it feels like this has been her year for some reason. It's weird, right?
Interesting, because once I saw her on the screen, like, because of Anatomy of the Fall, I had, like, a different expectation.
Mm.
You know, one thing that is interesting with this movie is I had a different expectation of the movie going in.
Right.
Because I heard it was so critically acclaimed.
Yeah.
I was, like, almost waiting for something to happen.
Yeah.
More, almost. You know what I mean?
Like, I get you.
And again, that's not a problem with the film. That's purely based on my expectation of it. I think this movie is interesting because it brings up an interesting conversation because, number one, do I think the movie sucked? No. Did I enjoy this movie? No.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, both of those things are true.
Yeah.
And what I think it brings up an interesting point of is the idea of enjoyment in filmmaking, right? Because a weird kind of question to ask is, like, are you supposed to enjoy a movie about the Holocaust?
I think what, and again, I think we're both going to be in the minority looking at what most people feel about this movie, is that the idea is it's meant to evoke emotion, right? It's meant to kind of almost give you a different idea and a different story, a different perspective about what was going on at that time on the German side.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, because it's so, they're so blasé, these characters about going about their business, but you know what's really going on and the impact on human life that's happening right now. That's the part that's meant to be kind of like almost horrific and sad and tragic.
I think that's what's interesting. That's the value of the film,
right?
Like, there's this family that's regularly aware of atrocities that are happening, not just around the world, but literally right beside them.
Yeah.
And they're trying to just live this normal life, which is, I think, as far as like social commentary goes, like this amazing metaphor for how we live right now. We have unlimited information. Mm. We're constantly seeing trauma and tragedy and
in all parts
atrocity
of the world.
Like happening right in front of our eyes. And we constantly turn our blind eye to it.
Yep.
We're aware of it. We turn away because, you know what? We're living our normal lives.
Or we just scroll past it on social media.
I'm just trying to live a fulfilling life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And that's just a part of like the human experience right now. Yeah. I think that's what's interesting about this movie, because it brings up this idea of, it's like a weird form of guilt that's kind of associated with how we live.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's very passive.
Yeah.
But it's almost like an awareness that we're living a specifically fortunate life. And at the same time, there are tons of people who are not.
Yes.
Right. And that is what this movie kind of brings into awareness. And that's why I think it's like an interesting movie, because, again, it's not necessarily that conversation about enjoyment, right? Like, this movie's more about making a statement than it is about making an enjoyable film, in my opinion.
Yeah. And even just from a plot perspective, it's almost like I was waiting for something almost like, I don't want to like over or undersell this, but pivotal to happen to the characters.
Yeah.
Where there's some development in the storyline.
Yeah.
But it never came.
There's not, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. That's kind of what's, I feel like, is like the strength of the movie as like this weird experience.
Right.
Is like, nothing happens. They're totally living these normal lives. I mean, it's not to say nothing happens. Like, there are developments and stuff like that. But it's not enough of like what you think is going to happen. All these developments are kind of happening in the background.
It's almost like a slice of life movie
respect. Yeah, for sure, for sure. And it at the end of the day, like, I can appreciate this film, but again, it's the enjoyability factor is like a weird kind of conversation to have, because like, enjoyability is like a big part of like how I would score a film.
Right.
But it's not necessarily what I think they're trying to get across.
Yeah.
As like, that's not what they're trying to accomplish with this film.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just, it's an interesting movie. That's what I'm going to say. Like, at the end of the day, like, I respect the swing of it. The movie is absolutely not for me, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
But
me too.
It's an interesting swing.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like, that is, I think, why it gets recognized. Because I think, I almost view it from like the perspective of like, there are people who are watching hundreds of films every single year. Like, we're among them probably.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there are people watching way more than us.
Right.
So when you get to like the nitty gritty of like, I've seen this movie a million times. How many times am I going to watch a romantic comedy? So you get kind of lost in that. So something like new and interesting like this that forces you to kind of think a little bit more or think in a different way or process filmmaking in a different way, I think that almost gets rewarded in an award kind of basis.
Yeah, that's a good point.
As far as our categories go, best character, who'd you have for that?
I had Sandra Hüller, who plays Hedwig Hoss. And I think I enjoyed her performance mostly because I was more interested in her character because of Anatomy of a Fall, and I was familiar, she was like a known commodity to me in the movie, so I was kind of like really focused on how she was kind of going about her business in the performance. And yeah, so taking away from the film, that was my favorite character.
Yeah, same way. I was really blown away by her performance in Anatomy of the Fall, so I was almost like looking for what she was capable of,
because right.
I've seen how good she can be. As far as best scene goes, where'd you end up with that?
I'm not gonna lie, I found it pretty tough to think back and pick out a scene that I thought was like, you know, my favorite scene or the best scene. But one that did stand out to me was there's a moment where the young sons are playing in the backyard, and I think it's the older brother locks the younger brother in the greenhouse.
Yeah.
And starts to make these noises of gassing at him.
Mm.
'Cause they're kids.
Yeah.
And they're seeing, I'm sure, what's happening just, you know, over the wall and for them, they're growing up thinking this is normal and they can make fun of it and play a game using these sounds. And that's pretty horrific to see on screen.
I think when you're a kid, you do end up making light of whatever kind of circumstances that you're under. So for me, my best scene is when the husband and the wife are fighting by the water.
Right.
When he says, "We need to relocate for my job." And then she's like, "What do you mean we?" You know what I mean? I love that part. I think that's like a really interesting scene.
Because
in this moment, that I find to be the most compelling and interesting part of the movie. Like this idea that, you know, on one hand, it's this scene where this woman is like basically arguing that they've created this dream home and this and that. And it's during the Holocaust that they have their dream experience. Right. You know what I mean? Like she's arguing, like, this is what we've been like
trying
to work for this our entire lives to have this exact situation, and you're literally by a concentration camp.
Yeah.
And you're obviously like, you're completely like, you know, compartmentalizing and like viewing a terrible situation through your lens and only your lens. But on the other end, I think I understand like the irony of the scene, like whatever the scene is, I find it really compelling and dramatic, and I think that's why I really liked it.
Yeah.
Which I think in one way is what this movie is kind of pointing out. In like a weird way, right? Like this drew my interest because it's a distraction. It's not the reality. The reality is the boring parts.
Yeah.
Right? But the distraction, the spicy part of the movie is what I was drawn to. I think that in itself is like an interesting little commentary of the movie as well.
There was also one scene that just came to mind now, actually. And it's when the engineers are kind of presenting the schematics of the gas chambers and the furnaces. Mm-hmm. And they're kind of like, oh, this is more efficient.
Yeah, they're talking about it like productivity.
Yeah, exactly.
I found really interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. That was wild.
Absolutely. As far as star rating goes, 0 being the worst, 5 being the best, where'd you end up with for the zone of interest?
I gave it a 2.5. Very much like you, appreciate from a technical standpoint and from an experimental standpoint, taking that swing, like you said. And I thought there are some strong performances, especially when you're dealing with the subject matter, like to portray the characters in this way, you've got to really deliver and bring that home.
Mm-hmm.
But from a plot perspective, from, again, for lack of a better word, from an enjoyment perspective, I didn't enjoy getting up from my seat and leaving the cinema thinking, I didn't spend a couple of hours, you know, well.
Yeah.
Don't know if I'm articulating this correctly, but yeah,
it's a tough one.
That's why it's in the kind of just a middle of the road movie rating for me.
Absolutely. I think it's a compelling watch, right? It's almost a more of a statement than a joyability watch kind of thing.
Right.
I went with 3 stars, by the way. I think it's a very well-made film. You could watch it if it's like piqued your interest. If you're into art house films, this is probably gonna be right up your alley. But and again, some people are gonna really like it, but dramatic movie nerds, I feel like this is not gonna be for everybody,
right?
And especially like if let's say, for example, like we did, we took a friend who's into movies but not like not watching every single Oscar nominated movie,
right?
And so when we brought them as well, they were like, what did I just watch?
Right.
And it's absolutely not an interesting, enjoyable experience. They're not trying to sit there and think about what the implications of this kind of filmmaking is. They're purely just trying to have a good time.
Yeah, this is not for the mainstream.
Yeah, and like, especially if you're looking for things like story and character development, like this is not for you.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And this movie, like I said, it's not so much about enjoyment. I think a very reasonable response to did you enjoy this film is no.
Mm.
Right? That's more than reasonable if you ask me. And can I appreciate it as a film, like as somebody who watches a lot of film? Absolutely. Does enjoyability, like I said, play a factor in how I score films? Absolutely. So that's why I went with 3. Again, middle is very much where I'd end up putting this, because again, it's an appreciation thing, not an enjoyability thing.
Yeah,
but that's everything for the Zone of Interest. Anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, only other than that, I feel like there would have probably been some better and stronger choices for the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
Than the Zone of Interest, now that I've seen it.
Right? Now it feels like, oh, this one?
Yeah.
Right? A little bit. Like, yeah. Again, it for me, it's almost like when you look at the entire category of Best Picture, there's so many different kinds of movies. This checks off like a very different kind of box.
Yeah.
But again, it's just like we were talking about before, there are a ton of other movies that I absolutely would have put above this.
100%.
100%. It absolutely is that standout for me when I look at that Best Picture list of like, this
like sticks out like a sore thumb.
Sticks out like a sore thumb for me personally. Yeah, but again, that's everything for the Zone of Interest. Let's get into the last segment of the show. Chumlin, can I get your weekly recommendation for this week?
Yeah, I actually really challenged myself to figure out some connective tissue, and I ended up getting a result. I am recommending Saving Private Ryan from 1998. It's an all-star cast, including Tom Hanks, Matt Damon, the late great Tom Sizemore, a young Vin Diesel. It ended up winning 5 Oscars, so tying into Oscar season as well, including Best Director for Steven Spielberg. And in my opinion, actually, it's actually maybe arguably the greatest World War II movie ever made. I've watched it a bunch of times, talking about cultural impact. When the movie came out, I remember that, you know, that first kind of like 30 minutes is just, it just hits you in the face.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's aged really well. I've watched it a bunch of times, like I said. So yeah, if you haven't seen it, Saving Private Ryan from 1998.
Fair. For me, again, I was also having a difficult time. I was thinking, like, can I think of an art house movie that I want to recommend?
Mm.
And I was like, no, I don't want to deal with that. So I was thinking, like, more so along the conversation that we were having before when it comes to the Oscars. There are a lot of great, enduring, culturally significant movies that never got nominated for an Oscar. And this is one of them. I am recommending Iron Claw. Again, it's part of that conversation. Like, Dazed and Confused never got nominated for an Oscar. No John Hughes movie ever got nominated for an Oscar. He has 0 Oscar nominations, and he's one of my favorite directors of all time. And again, award shows are fun, but they're not the end-all be-all of, like, value in film. And The Iron Claw is this amazing movie about brotherhood, family, ambition. There's just, it's really one of the most interesting films of the entire year. It absolutely will probably be one of the most rewatched movies, I think, for me, of the entire year for last year. And it's also the best movie that's ever been made about professional wrestling. And again, also one of the best movies of 2023.
This might be the quickest turnaround from reviewing a movie to recommending a movie we've ever had.
I feel like it's
SOS
very
history.
At the end of the day, it's actually also, I just saw recently that it's the 6th highest grossing movie in A24's catalog, like entirely. So
of the year?
Yeah. No, just period. Like
period?
Period, right?
So, no shit.
Yeah, making money. And at the end of the day, it's successful. I hope, we were talking about it in our review. I hope this branches off more of these stories from professional wrestling and all that kind of stuff, because there's so much interesting source material to work with there. But yeah, so my recommendation is Iron Claw. That's everything for this week. Jumma, where can anybody find us?
We are at Screen Off Script on Facebook, Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube Shorts. We're available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Hey, listen, do us a favor. What did you think of our review of The Zone of Interest? Did you agree, disagree? What do you think about our recommendations? What are your thoughts on the Oscar nominations? Let us know in the comments, because by doing that, it actually helps our show get found by new audiences on the algorithm.
Awesome. Thank you for checking us out this week. Take care.